You are Locked On Lakers. Your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Locked On Lakers for
Wednesday.
Brian Kamenetsky and Andy Kamenetsky. After the Lakers even up the series against Phoenix, they go and they win game two in Phoenix, 109-102, the final score. There's a lot to talk about this one. But I mean, I'll say, first thing, because we'll talk about Anthony Davis and we'll talk about Dennis Schroeder and Andre Drummond and LeBron's ankle and the shooting, and there's still a lot of stuff that's coming up in this series. But I mean, I didn't think game one was interesting. It had moments where it was kind of exciting. It was not a fun game. I don't mean this because the Lakers lost. It was just, it wasn't a fun game to watch. This was fun.
Yeah.
It got off to a really good start. There was back and forth the second half, and particularly when Phoenix is making its runs. I mean, this was a great playoff basketball game.
Campaign is now going to be a household name. Like,
who sounds like a WWE guy. Like, Campaign ought to be a WWE player.
I'm pretty sure like Campaign is a role that Mark Wahlberg has played in some like B-level action movie, something like that. Like,
It is the laziest action hero name of all time.
I'm actually half right. I just realized what I am thinking of. Like, that started as a joke, and I just realized, no, you're thinking of when he played Max Payne in an actual movie, which was based off a graphic novel, but still close enough. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, as somebody that was not familiar with the Max Payne series until I actually saw the movie, if it had been Campaign, it would not have affected me one way or the other.
Slightly different novel. But yeah, so this one was a ton of fun to watch, and a great bounce back game for all kinds of reasons, which we'll get into here in just a second. Do want to tell you first, though, that this episode of Locked On Lakers is brought to you by Locker Room. Download the app and join us Friday at noon Pacific time to get in on the action. We'll be hosting there on Locker Room. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports. This one, before we get into Anthony Davis specifically, because obviously, Andy, he was such a huge subject coming out of game one and in the off day. You talk about playoff experience sometimes as, you know, it can be kind of cliche. You just sort of lean on it as a thing to get you through, you know, a radio segment or a podcast or a column or whatever it might be. That fourth quarter where the crowd is going nuts, Phoenix is making a run, Campaign is hitting shots from all over the place.
But it's important to point this out just because Chris Paul, that shoulder was bothering him a lot in this game. He didn't play nearly as much as he normally would have.
Right. Monty Williams said in the TNT interview, like, oh, he's going to play in the fourth quarter. And he did. And he left pretty quick.
He only played 23 minutes for 6 points, 5 assists against 3 turnovers that he was really struggling with his handle. So, you know, obviously you looked at Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton have big games and they both played really well. But guys like Campaign, mm-hmm. Cam Johnson, Jay Crowder down the stretch, you know, they were having these big moments where it felt like, okay, the Lakers built up this lead and they are potentially
up to 50. It was 15 points at its highest, I believe.
And then Phoenix got back into this during a period where Devin Booker actually had been sitting.
Yes.
And then they were continuing it with LeBron and AD on the court. So you're thinking, holy crap, like, are the Lakers actually going to let this one slip away?
And I honestly was worried in the fourth quarter that they scored 30 points in the fourth quarter. It turned out to be just fine. But, you know, they when they were struggling a little bit, that they wouldn't be able to score enough to keep this game, as a win for them. But, you know, you start to see, you know, that you have these moments and for me, the critical part that everybody's going to be talking about is that sequence where the Lakers are up by a point, and after Payne finishes at the rim with a, you know, nice little layup, and then the Lakers have one of their worst possessions of the season, like when you consider time and place, a shot clock violation.
Yeah. They just swung the ball, and I mean, nobody was looking to shoot.
Kudos to, you know, for looking, you know, to be team players, guys. But I mean, somebody's got to shoot the ball within 24 seconds. It's a rule. And they get a shot clock violation right after this huge bucket from Payne. And it just, I mean, that crowd was insane. And so you have on the next possession, Phoenix comes out of the timeout and you end up with Ayton on Caruso. And I want to talk about this play in a little bit. But Ayton on Caruso, right before the end of the shot clock, Davis comes, blocks the shot. Next trip down, LeBron, that's about 3 minutes left, hits an insane fall away rainbow jumper along the baseline, puts the Lakers up by three. Next trip down for the Lakers, AD hits a three, which he hasn't done much since coming back from the injury. You know, makes two free throws after that, and then you get LeBron. And LeBron hits the dagger three. Like, that's all of this with incredible defense in between. Like, that to me was like gritty. We've been there before, leaning on our experience, leaning on our confidence in ourselves, because we just won a title. Like, it felt really important to me that they had gone through that. I'm not sure they have that same reaction, even with LeBron James and Anthony Davis last year, having not gone through it. I don't know.
The tone of this game was just different. I mean, from the moment this game began, the Lakers were so much more engaged and active and lively. They were disruptive on defense, even when their defense in the first quarter wasn't perfect. Like, they allowed Phoenix to get to the line way too often.
They were so aggressive. They were fouling.
Right, exactly. Like, they were not always playing smart, and their intelligence defensively got a lot better as the game went along. Mm-hmm. But just the way that they came out aggressively and just much more like a team with a real purpose in that first quarter, it set a tone that I think really allowed them to dig back into those moments that you were talking about late in the game, where they really had to protect it.
They didn't have to crank up any intensity. Yeah. They were already there. You know, Phoenix, to their credit, Phoenix is a good team. Our questions before the series started around the Suns were not, is Phoenix good? My only question was, Phoenix was really healthy most of the season. They really weren't beaten up by the COVID protocols. You know, Chris Paul was healthy. Devin Booker was generally healthy. The only guy that was sort of important that was out of the lineup a lot was Johnson. And my question was, are they that much better than the rest of the West? Teams that really got scrambled, Dallas, who's now up 2-0 on the Clippers, by the way, the Lakers, whoever it might be. They're obviously really good. You can't expect it to go in and it to be easy. But the Lakers, I think, matched what Phoenix was bringing from the beginning. And like, we were texting during the game, you know, the Lakers' offense still wasn't great. For most of the game, they were well under 30% from three-point range. The difference and why the Lakers were up 6, 7, 8 points and were ahead most of the game, at one point they had 13 more field goal attempts than the Suns, because they were forcing turnovers, because they were getting offensive rebounds with Andre Drummond, who we'll get to in the next segment. Like, there were things that they weren't doing well that were kind of, I don't want to even say papered over, because that makes it sound like they didn't deserve it almost, but that were made up for by doing other things really well.
Well, and it was also made up for by Anthony Davis just having a monster game. 34 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists, 3 blocks. He got to the line 21 times. 20, that's insane.
That is a lot.
That is
of times.
Well, but just, I mean, like, 21 times is a lot for a superstar to get to the line. Like, the Lakers shot 31 as a team. And, you know, they've got LeBron, you know, LeBron's ankle notwithstanding, LeBron's somebody that can draw fouls. Like, they've got Schroeder is good at getting to the line. Davis outshined all of them just in this respect. And it just reflected how much more assertive and aggressive and determined that he was after he said, after the game one loss, this is on me.
Yeah.
Like he made good on that. And you and I thought that he would, but it was still great to see.
Completely. And let's talk, because that 21 figure, like you say, points to a level of aggression, but it points to something else, I think, that's really key when you think about this game with Davis and what it can mean for the Lakers going forward. We'll do that next.
This episode brought to you by Locker Room, the first social audio platform made for sports fans. The app is free to download. Once you're in, you can talk with me, Brian, other fans, athletes, insiders in real time about your favorite team or sport. We will be hosting.
Mostly you're just talking to us. That's why you're downloading the app.
I think that's really the reason the app was conceived in the first place.
The original name of it was Locker Room with Andy and Brian.
Yes, it felt a little too narrow, but Locked On Lakers will be hosting every Friday noon Pacific time. You can join the conversation, listen to here every day. If you behave yourselves and don't act like jackasses, we will sometimes even let you talk during the Locker Room session. Locker Room, the perfect place to start. Join conversations about the league. You'll find fans just like yourself for watch parties, debates, post-game breakdowns, and of course, reacting to big news and rumors. Download the free Locker Room app now, currently available on all iOS devices. Be sure to create a profile, link to your Twitter, join the group for the latest league updates. Follow us at Cam Brothers to be notified when the room goes live. You don't want to miss it. Again, we are going to be doing this every Friday, noon Pacific. We want to hear everybody's thoughts on the Lakers. We'll see you there. Locker Room, changing the way we talk about sports.
So that 21 free throw mark, Andy, I think is important. You talked about the aggression, and it's important to hone in on that, because you look at the final line, 34 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists, 1 steal, 3 blocks. I think you could look at that and be like, oh man, this is just one of those games where he was dominant and he was in the flow and all this other stuff. And I don't think that's necessarily true. I think he came out of the gates really aggressive. LeBron talked about like their goal was to feed him often and always. But after a really good start, it was hard for him, I think, to generate. Like, this was not a game where he was, you know, hitting a bunch of mid-range shots and looking great from distance and like just unguardable all over the floor. And it was harder than that. And I mean that as a compliment, because what he did on Tuesday was harder, I think, than the final line makes it look. And I think so much of that is in those 21 free throw attempts. Like, you got to be working the whole time if you're going to get to the line 21 times, because 7 of 15 from the floor, at least 4 of those shots were like dunks, you know, on feeds, you know, things like that. They didn't come. Most of them did not come from mid range.
Okay. I mean, not to get too semantic about this, and I don't want to go down a rabbit hole about definitions and that, but I would take some exception to what you were saying about him not being unguardable, because I think by definition, if you get 21 free throws, you are impossible to guard.
Okay, all I mean by it is, like, you know, just one of these nights where he's hitting shots from all over the floor and like doesn't matter where he's taking him. Like he had last year where, you know, every 20 footer he took seemed to go in. That's sure. All I mean.
That's fine, but I'm just saying he made himself unguardable one way or the other, because he shot close to 50% in this game and could not be guarded without fouling for the overwhelming majority of shots that he was looking to take. Like, one way or the other, he was getting points out of it. Frank Vogel, I thought, made a really good observation about Davis in this game, and he said that he was attacking the paint with and without the ball. Mm-hmm. And it reflects what you and I talked about a lot in our show after game one, you know, about, for all the consternation about Andre Drummond's presence on this team playing two bigs and his inability to space the floor. And, you know, that turns Anthony Davis into a jump shooter. BS. No, it doesn't. But what often turns Anthony Davis into a jump shooter is Anthony Davis. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, you do need to find that balance when you're talking about somebody like Andre Drummond, who can often just be parked in the dunker spot. But at the same time, though,
or even worse, the low post.
Right. But at the same time, man, like, if Anthony Davis is attacking, I don't care how crowded that basket is, people are going to react.
Yeah,
it's not like he's not going to be able to get anything going because there's a crowd there. Like, you need to find
balance.
It makes a difference.
Like, you know, Cranjus McBasketball, you know, we retweeted it at Cam Brothers during the day, and I think we even alluded to it somewhere in the podcast or something, but like, or one of the YouTube clips that we put up on Tuesday. Like, he noted that, yes, when you break it down, AD shoots more jumpers with Drummond on the floor.
Dying over here, man.
I know. It's tough. I was, you know, tense, exciting game. AD shoots more, but like, a lot of it isn't just because of his presence there. There's still a lot of shots that aren't jumpers. And what I think the biggest difference tonight, in game two, was that he made choices quickly. When he got the ball, he did something quickly. And I think a lot of times what he ends up doing is trying to kind of be a thoughtful, cerebral player, because he is a good passer and he is a smart player, but like, too deliberate and too patient and too, just get the ball. Sometimes just get the ball and F and go and put it on the floor and drive or turn and shoot or do something, but don't do the thing where you kind of wait, is the double going to come? And when it does, I'm going to make the right pass. Go be aggressive and do whatever you do, make a choice quickly. And I think that is when Anthony Davis is at his best. And he was doing that a lot on Tuesday, much more than he did on Sunday.
Yeah, and it was a game where he fit very well with Andre Drummond, who, you know, I think it's safe to say fans have been looking to see him not just benched, but I think not even allowed inside the arena as to not tempt Frank Vogel to put him on the court, even though, you know, game one, he was not the solution, but he was not the problem either.
He wasn't the problem.
Drummond had a great game. He had a double-double in the first half, finished with 15 points, 12 rebounds, again, owning the offensive glass, this time five of them, two steals, a block. You know, he was not perfect in, you know, covering DeAndre Ayton. Frankly, nobody was. We're going to get into that later on.
What did he finish in this game? Because
DeAndre Ayton finished the game 11 of 13 for 22 points.
So he is now 21 of 24 in this series. That's good.
Yeah, I mean, look.
That's excellent.
Here's the thing that I think people need to remember with DeAndre Ayton, and I am happy for him in this sense, because I think this series has been a reminder. He's not Luka Doncic. Phoenix should have taken Luka first overall instead of him. That is never going to change. He is likely never going to be in the same stratosphere as Luka. Luka is going to be a perennial MVP candidate. DeAndre Ayton, hopefully, will end up an perennial all-star.
I think he'll make some all-star teams, yeah.
But here's the thing, though. He's really good. He's really, really good, even though he is not as good as the guy that should have been taken number one overall. And these last couple games against a very good defensive team with a lot of size has been a reminder this dude can play.
Yeah.
And the way Phoenix specifically plays, which we're going to get into later, I think causes a lot of problems, frankly, for any of the bigs that are going to be out there. But either way, Drummond was really, really good in a game that I think, you know, he has needed. Like,
and it was good in a way that matches what the Lakers, I think, were thinking of. And you know, where, you know, he's kind of out of the way, but, you know, where he goes and he makes his impact is like, get out of the way and then crash the offensive glass. So you can really see the attention that he brings, you know, two or three guys. And there were still a couple of, you know, Andre Drummond-like plays where he played in the first half where he tries a little spin move and like dribbles off his leg. And they were
big ass legs, man, in fairness.
They are very, very, very big legs.
I don't know how the hell he's got a reasonably good handle for a guy his size, I guess. You know, he had that one terrific play where he got fed by, I think, AD falling out of bounds. And he took the ball basically from the arc straight to the hoop. It was impressive. That being said, I don't even know if LeBron had Andre Drummond's size legs, I don't even know if LeBron could dribble around him. I don't know if Kyrie could do it.
No. I mean, but like, so he, you know, he had that moment where he dribbled off his leg and spin move, ball goes out of bounds. And, you know, he, there at least twice. You know, the Lakers gave possessions where they dumped the ball into to Drummond and let him go to work, which is at least two times too many for that. Like, that is the least efficient way to use Drummond. But overall, he was really good. And I think, you know, the Lakers got what, you know, Lakers fans got what they wanted in Marc Gasol playing in this game. And what I thought was great for Drummond was that you saw in the contrast between Gasol, who I thought was good. I mean, there were moments, particularly in the second half when Phoenix was really starting to speed up the game, where Gasol looked a step. He looked like a 7-foot dad bod kind of guy. And, but like, you could see the contrast between the two and why Drummond could still be useful and doesn't need to be sent off into the wilderness so that Marc Gasol can play 30 minutes a night. And so I was happy for him because he seems like a decent guy, and yeah, it's good for the Lakers if he plays well. Like, you know, that's, they seem to have found their center rotation, which is both of their big bigs. And yep, we'll go forward from there. I assume that's what they'll do in game three.
Well, Vogel said afterwards that he wanted to go with Drummond and Gasol because he really wanted to try to punish Phoenix with size. He wanted to keep them, you know, inexplicably off the glass the way they were in game one, which was just frankly embarrassing.
Yeah, that got back to normal in game two. Yeah. It helped that the Lakers didn't shoot 20%, you know, like they didn't miss 6,000 shots over the course of the game. But yeah, I mean, they won the rebounding battle. It was 39 to 31. So much more what you would expect.
And then before we break, man, Dennis Schroeder, like Frank Vogel talked before the game about how Schroeder still didn't seem to have his conditioning back from the time in the protocol, recovering from COVID, not COVID.
Right. from recovering just from something.
From the period where he had to be isolated, apparently could not work out at all, didn't get the vaccine. We learned this from Schroeder, but apparently can't get COVID, even though he didn't get COVID. Whatever. He has needed a game like this. He was fantastic. There were periods where he was carrying the offense.
Plus 16 in 34 minutes, 24 points. You know, this was similar to Drummond being like, oh, okay, look at all the destruction he's causing. Cause part of the reason that AD was able to get to the line 21 times because Phoenix piled up fouls. Part of the reason they piled up fouls was because of, you know, guys like Drummond, all the activity that they had around, you know, the offensive glass and things like that and rebounding generally. You know, Schroeder had a similar game where it's like, okay, that's what it is. Where like on a night where LeBron is having trouble attacking, and we're going to get to that in the next segment, look at what Schroeder is able to do to get to the basket. Look what he's able to generate, looks for other people, easy buckets for himself, things at the rim. Oh yeah, that's why they got him. Like you saw that. And then, you know, he was 2 of 4 from 3-point range. So he hit the, you know, half of his threes. He got to the rim. I mean, again, plus 16 in 34 minutes. You really saw, it was a night where it was one of the rare nights, I think, this year where the Lakers three best players were the three players who were supposed to be their best players.
Yeah. Yeah. I on balance. Yeah, that was it. And it's been a while. I mean, you know, it's been a while since you've seen all those guys on the court at the same time,
correct?
You know, for a sustained period. But yeah, you are absolutely correct, and they're going to need that moving forward because, yep, as we're going to get into, there are still some areas that the Lakers look a little shaky.
Yeah, so let's talk about that next. After we tell you that Locked On Lakers, the podcast, is also brought to you by Built Bar. Andy, I like to snack. I like to try to eat healthy. I'm like running around all day, all that stuff. Like, you know, I need something that I can eat that tastes good, but it's healthy. And that's Built Bar. It's high in protein, but it's low in sugar and calories. And the improved Built Bar is even more delicious than before. They've got 18 flavors, including 6 new ones like caramel brownie, cookies and cream, and cherry barcia. Built Bar can calm my sweet tooth because even without all the sugar, it's still coated in 100% chocolate, like real chocolate, like Willy Wonka chocolate, like real stuff. And unlike some protein bars, it's soft and easy to chew. So go to builtbar.com, use the promo code LOCKED15, you get 15% off your next order. Again, that's the promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at builtbar.com.
Locked On Lakers also brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online, the fastest, easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season's in full swing. You can track all the action at Bet Online. There's always a ton of sports action on the go, as you may be aware. Assuming you've been listening to this podcast, the NBA playoffs are going on. You can bet on that. Get all the latest news, odds, info on your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, UFC, MMA. Before the next pitch, head over to Bet Online on your laptop, mobile device. Check out all the great sporting news, sign up bonuses, contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. This is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their run to the playoffs. Head to the website, use your mobile device, sign up today, receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit, promo code Locked On. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts.
I thought when LeBron, after the re-injury, and that was in Indiana, correct?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. When he came out and, you know, Frank Vogel said, you know, all good, good to go. And LeBron said, I'll be fine and all that. My initial reaction to that was they are all lying. They are lying liars who tell lies and he is not healthy. Then I watched him play and I was like, they are lying liars who tell lies and he is not himself. It is a testament to LeBron that he was able to do some of the things that he did in game two on Tuesday. And overall, the final line, 9 of 16, 23 points, 9 assists, 2 steals, 4 rebounds. It looks pretty good in 4 of 9 from three-point range. But he took 9 three-pointers. He did not spend much time at the rim, and it's not because that's what the defense gave him. I think it's pretty clear the times he's tried, particularly in the half court, to put the ball on the floor and beat people with athleticism, that pop is not there.
Yeah.
He's bigger and stronger than everybody still and smarter than everybody, but the athletic part of LeBron is, I don't know why I air quoted athletic with LeBron as if it's like not true.
Yeah. Stupid. I mean, even at this level, I think we can all agree he's still fairly athletic.
He is, as Benny would have called it, a good little athlete.
You should tell people who Benny, let people know who Benny is.
Our grandpa right. Benny.
Just make sure it actually makes sense.
Yeah, no, it's true. As opposed to just somebody named Benny.
Right.
Like, he's not right. He's righter than Chris Paul, which is an advantage to the Lakers, but he's not right. And it puts the impetus, I think, Andy, on Schroeder, on Davis, on those guys to be really good. And I don't know when LeBron's going to get right. I don't think he's right yet, though.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be beneficial heading into game four that you get 2 days off. You know, I mean, every single extra day that he can have for recovery.
Game three is Thursday, game four is Sunday.
Right, so he's going to have that extra day. Every single day can hopefully be incrementally helpful. But this is likely something that is going to be, you know, a thing he's going to have to deal with, man. I mean, this is where spending $1 million every year to insure your body, like Jennifer Lopez does with her ass, like this is where the whole thing pays off. I'm going by rumors with Jennifer Lopez. That's what you hear. You hear that she insures her butt for like $1 million.
And I wonder at this point, too, shouldn't LeBron be spending more than that? Like, $1 million on your body when you're LeBron James isn't that big of an investment. I have a $10 a month membership at Planet Fitness that is probably a bigger percentage of my income spending $1 million.
Here's the thing, though. Up until LeBron's first season with the Lakers, which was the first time that he ever really got hurt, like, I don't know, going back to like multiple seasons, if not literally the first time, $1 million probably felt like it was enough. Like, and I don't know if these are updated figures. Like, for all I know, he's bumped this up to like 2.5.
That's
3.
What I'm saying. I feel like it could be higher now.
I don't know. I mean, I also am not totally familiar with how much at the end of the day it really costs. Like, for all we know, like $1 million for a long time was totally unnecessary. Like, LeBron was getting ripped off, and now he's actually paying the proper adequate amount. Like,
there's
before,
only so much you can spend.
Or like, maybe for a while, LeBron really enjoyed the mythology of $1 million and, you know, was just content to toss it away because he's LeBron and makes so much money. And now he's like, oh, wow. Like,
Number was, you know, it's sort of like in my head, the year 2003 feels closer to like today than 2030 does, even though it's obviously not. Just in my head, like maybe he just is one of those deals where like the actual number is $2.3 million, but $1 million just sounds like it's more money than that. I don't know. Well, you could be right.
In any event, though, I mean, he's going to need every single opportunity to heal up. The good news, though, I guess, is that he is able to hit outside shots, and he is apparently the only Laker who can. Like, oh my God, they shot 30% in this win, which was moving upward.
The Lakers going back to last year. If everybody remembers the threshold that they had to hit, if they shot 30% or better from 3-point range, they won. Anything less than, by the way, 30% is not good. People scoring at home. 30 is not good. 30 makes you the worst 3-point shooting team in the league. But if they cleared that last year, they won. The LeBron dagger three Tuesday night in Phoenix pushed them from 28-point-whatever to 30.3. So the streak, and it continues. Yeah. Just got to get to 30.
I mean, they just cannot hit outside shot. There was a sequence late in the fourth quarter where they were swinging the ball. It went to KCP, who was wide open. He ends up pushing it to Schroeder in the corner. Schroeder misses it. There's quickly a timeout afterwards, and LeBron beelines over to KCP and is screaming in his face. Basically, he is doing the equivalent of, like, remember the show Scared Straight?
Yes.
He is doing like the equivalent of Scared Straight for passing up shots. Like, all that was missing was a jail cell and like the guard who's been there for 30 years and seen all these before, and you know, knows what this troubled youth is going through, and what these guys who've been in prison for 30 or 40 years, what they say every year to turn around these wayward youths. I mean, he was screaming at KCP, "What the bleep are you doing?"
Right. It was actually in a leadership way. It's like, and you could see it, like people, you know, the professional lip readers on Twitter were breaking it down. I think they got it right. He was basically saying, I pass you the ball because I want you to shoot the ball. Shoot the goddamn ball because I'm passing it to you with the, you know, that is why you're getting it. So do it. Like, I believe in you. Shoot the ball. And
it's
look,
like
he was
like the
seven.
Opposite. Right. It's the opposite of when, you know, according to Ron Artest, Kobe would pass him the ball.
Right.
That was just a passing back.
Give it back, like give it back to me. KCP's problems shooting the ball there are legit and they are problematic. He was 1 of 7 in game one. He was 0 for 4 in game two.
Still got to do it.
The Lakers, of course. And that's what LeBron's point was. The Lakers are at their worst when AD and LeBron are their best 3-point shooters.
Yeah. No, you
that
want
is not
floor,
what that offense is supposed to,
you
to
be. You want the floor spaced for them. You don't want LeBron spacing the floor for everybody else.
So that Andre Drummond can go to work and post. Like, that's not the idea here.
All right. Speaking of Andre Drummond, in terms of other elements that are still problematic for the Lakers, DeAndre Ayton, as we pointed out before, has been killing them in this series so far. And I was thinking about, like, in terms of what's going on, what the Lakers can do, like, you know, what's causing all this. And one of the things that jumped out at me, and I've been trying to get an opportunity to ask Frank Vogel or players about it, and it's just hard in these Zooms because they're so crowded, and you know they rightly give first priority to the traveling beat writers, people like that, and sometimes you just run out of time. Right. But I think Phoenix...
Orem plays the ukulele.
I think Phoenix is a really counterintuitive team to guard because they love getting to the mid-range in an era where teams avoid that those parts on the floor altogether. Like, Devin Booker is really good there. Chris Paul is really good there. Campaign, I looked it up today, is actually good in the mid-range. So when they run these pick and rolls, there's really nowhere to send them. That's sort of their uncomfortable spots. And then because they're so good in the mid-range, like if you're Andre Drummond or Marc Gasol, you're naturally going to want to come up on those guys.
You get a little stuck. Yeah, you get a little stuck.
It's so easy to, I think, end up in no man's land against them and let DeAndre Ayton get behind you.
And Ayton is obviously, you know, super athletic around the rim, and like he's an easy, you know, good target. They've got good guards. They move the ball well. Devin Booker draws a ton of attention, and Ayton is very active. the thing about it was I did a and before we're done, I mean, I we got obviously plenty to get into for Thursday's show ahead of game three. I did a hit for a radio station in Phoenix on Tuesday morning, and they asked me about Devin Booker's big game. He was 16 of 32 in game one, something like that. He shot 50%. Much like Lakers did a much better job, at least on from the field in game two, 7 of 17, but he was shot 17 free throws, still scored 31 points on 17 shots. He asked me what do you do? Like, how concerned are you about Booker? You know, how do you put a lid on him or whatever? And the same, and my response was basically, I think they were fine. They did it. You know, Phoenix scored 99 points in game two or game one. They scored 102 points in game two. It's okay if Ayton and Booker have good games. If you can hold Jay Crowder 2 for 8, and Mikal Bridges, who's been kind of a non-factor so far, has 6 points. And, you know, Saric doesn't do anything off the bench, and Cam Johnson is quiet. Like, it's okay if Booker and Ayton are good. It's just if you can't prevent those other things from happening. And so I'm okay so far with Ayton. It'd be better if they could slow him down. But if this is the formula that the Lakers get and push through this series with, where, you know, Booker takes a bunch of shots and you do your best on him, and Ayton's there for a lot of easy cleanups and, you know, finishes off the pick and roll or whatever it is, obviously you want to try to limit that as much as possible. But I think it's okay if Phoenix's overall offense isn't great, and it hasn't been for two games. So that's sort of my thinking, though. But you are definitely on to something, I think, with looking at it. They're a tough team to defend. They're very good.
I imagine,
and they're unusual, like you said.
I was going to say, I imagine for the Lakers, you have to unlearn so many defensive instincts of playing in the modern NBA.
Well, you have learned very Yoda.
You will unlearn. You are absolutely correct. But definitely a lot more to get into. We will have stuff coming up on our YouTube channel, so make sure you are subscribing to that. And obviously, if you are not subscribed to the Locked On Lakers podcast, make sure that you change that as well.
All right, we will see.